So let's talk about mindfulness and meditation. They give you eight different things to consider here, these eight realizations. This is a pretty important text in the Bodhisattvayana. The one thing I want to point out about this is that these meditations are not the traditional sitting meditation. This is very strictly Chan from the Lin Chi. Which we'll discuss that in another time. But you see in there that it says meditating on these brings liberation moment after moment, right? So from this very moment of now to the very next moment of now, the mindfulness flashed on these eight concerns brings liberation in those immediate moments. You'll notice those moments, you're not sitting. In other words, these are real time. Sitting on the meditation mat, your cushion, is not exactly real time. It isn't really. In fact, that's controlled environment. Because you're usually in your own home or your own meditation space or you're somehow secluded or something. You're not being asked to perform a task at work. You're not making dinner. You're not showering or mowing the lawn or whatever it is that you may be doing in the real world moment. A sitting meditation, you're not involved in anything other than just sitting. So these realizations, when we start looking at Chan and the contemplations, should not be done on the mat. That is, of course, from Kamp's perspective, where we begin. All beginners start on the mat. Why? Because they have never spent any time looking at themselves at all. And here's a very big misunderstanding, especially those when we come to Buddhism, maybe those that have been in it for a little while, we kind of get deluded again. Sitting meditation is never the method to enlightenment. But it isn't. Because that's not where your problems happen. For those that grasp or cling to this idea that sitting on the mat is the way to be peaceful and blah, 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 are also those very people that have fantasies and they romanticize the idea of just going and living in a cave. Oh, if I could just go up on the top of a mountain and just sit under a tree somewhere. If I could just go out to the middle of the desert. If I could just vanish from the face of the earth and just sit peacefully, I would have nirvana. Well, yes, you would, because nothing would be happening. In fact, a better system is just be dead. That's a really great way to achieve a nirvanic state. So people have this idea, this fantasy, that, well, if I could just go on a 3-year retreat, or a 3-month retreat, or a 3-week retreat. Some of those really impractical people, oh, if I could just do a 3-day retreat, a 3-hour retreat, a 3-minute retreat. The key word there is the word retreat. Anyone know what that word is? Run away! Flee! We can't attain enlightenment that way. We actually can't attain anything by running away, by retreating. One of my great lamas, great teachers, went into 3-year retreat, like most traditional people in Asia, and ended up staying 5 years. And so his teacher then came around and said, your 3-year retreat was over 2 years ago. And he says, oh yeah, I'm on the verge of something really big. Don't, you know, let me stay here. Don't kick me out yet. And he says, okay, you can do another 3-year retreat. So then the 10-year mark came. And he had been in retreat 10 years now. And his teacher comes to him and says, okay, well, not only was your second, third-year retreat done, you've been here 10 years. Aren't you going to go? Go do something now? And he says, oh, well, I'm so close to merging into Dharma. You know, he's like, I'm just having these profound instances and the moments and all of. And he says, let me do a retreat. And he says, okay, you can do a 3-year retreat. But, you know, this is getting kind of crazy. And he says, okay, 3-year retreat. 15 years now. His teacher comes back to him and says, now listen, I let you do another 3-year retreat and you did 5 more years again. This is 15 years you've been in the retreat. What are you doing? And he goes, oh, I'm absorbing the Dharma into myself. I'm looking deep into the. And he says, I'm not thinking that's true. I think you're on vacation. He says, no. You know, I'm absorbing all, and I'm beginning to see all this insight. And he says, let me have a retreat. And he says, okay, 3 more year retreat, and this is it. So another 5 years go by. 20 years now. From when he first went in. 20 years later. And his teacher comes and says, get out. And he says, oh, no. I'm. And he goes, no, get out of my retreat center. It's 20 years. No, I'm about to. And he says, no, you get out or I'm throwing you out I'm cutting you off. I won't be your teacher anymore. I'm cutting you off completely. I will have no more of you. Get out. And he says, but look what I've accomplished this 20-year retreat. He says, you've accomplished nothing but wore out your seat. You've not applied any Dharma at all because you haven't been anywhere to apply Dharma. Nothing has happened to you. You need to get out. And he says, but isn't this how we find Dharma? He goes, no, you know how you find Dharma? You go out and get a job and start teaching people and get students that will drive you crazy. And this way you can apply Dharma because you're driving me crazy. And I'm having to apply Dharma. Get out! And so, my Param Guru threw out my teacher. Kicked him out. Forced him to go do something. And he says, well, what am I going to do? He goes, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to go down the bottom of this mountain and you're going to take over the monastery that's down there. And you're going to run the business end of it. That way, you can't sit on your throne or in retreat. You're actually going to do the bills. You're going to do fundraising. You're going to feed the monks. You're going to do all of the business end of running that temple. And then I'll come visit you in 20 years and see how it's going. And that's it. Kicked him out, sent him down to a monastery, and he had to go to work. We at the Blue Lotus have studied as a group many times verses on faith mind. We've read Huainong, his Platform Sutra, numerous times. If you've been around, you've seen Diamond Sutra, and we've studied through that. There's a key element here. Chan or jhana, this idea of sitting meditation, focuses on total awareness. Total awareness takes place off the mat, not on the mat. So why, when we come to Buddhism, are we taught to meditate and sit? Well, generally because we have never done that before. We have never sat down and seen directly how out of control we are. I mean, we already know that we're out of control, but we know it from kind of a third-party way. In that we're out of control, and we say, oh yeah, I'm way out of control. But we don't want to look and see how or why. We just see the byproduct or aftermath of our out of controlness, of our craziness. But we don't look to see the cause or the quality of where it's coming from. And when I say quality, the richness of our craziness. Because it's really, really rich. We have these brilliant, philosophical, spiritual, deeply religious ideas that ruin our day, every day of our lives. Because we've made our own religion of self-destruction and suffering. And we've perfected our samsara. Because we've attempted to retreat from it. We've attempted to go find the refuge from it. And all of our methods have failed. Which reinforces our craziness. So what we're told to do when we first come to Buddhism is just sit here on this mat and see directly, pure, just peer directly into the muddy water. And when you look into it, we want you to actually see the swirling of the dirt in the water. We want you to see the churning that's going on. We want you to see how polluted it is. Look closely at that thick film of oil that is just floating on top of the pool. Do you see all the mosquito larvae swimming around? You know, they do this kind of thing. You have this horrid pool of water. And we say, just sit there for a minute and peer right into that. Look into this. See it. And we go, whoa! And sometimes when we're slightly misguided, we find that we can relax looking into this pool. Like there's something almost calming just looking into the craziness and not really doing anything, but just sitting there. Crazy mind. But I'm breathing. Oh, this is great because I'm not mowing the lawn. Nobody's yelling at me. Nothing's happening. I'm just sitting here. maybe being frustrated because I'm thinking about this instead of my breath, and I should be thinking about my breath. Oh, that's so hard. Now I'm back to thinking of my breath and everything's so great. I'm not doing dishes. I'm not fighting with anyone. Oh, now I'm upset because I'm thinking about that again. Oh, it's so difficult to sit here. Tragic. Heartbreaking that I can't just sit on a bench. Oh, it's so difficult. How much time is left? Oh, no. I've only been here 4 minutes, and I still have another 25 to go. That's your idea of working Dharma? And then the little bell goes off and you get up and you change your clothes and you go to work and now you're fighting with your boss and your coworkers and you have this big project due and you're not going to make it and there's all of this and you're freaking out and it's time to go to the bar and get this taken care of because that's the way we're going to deal with this, right? And then in the morning we go, oh yeah, I got to meditate because, you know, that's what we do now that I'm this... Wait, what religion am I again? Buddhist, yeah. So now I need to sit. Right? And this is what we think meditation and mindfulness is? That's ridiculous. Lin Chi taught his students to never, ever, ever sit and meditate. How many of you knew that? This Chan religion, this so-called Zen that all of us are so into, the root teachers of that used to beat the living trash out of their students with sticks and canes and anything else they could get a hold of if they caught them sitting. In fact, when you see in the Sutra of Huainong, the Platform Sutra, when he says, all those people that try and sit down and they're doing this meditation, they're no different than trying to become a rock or just a vegetable state. It's because they weren't allowed to sit. Huainong did not allow his students to do sitting meditation. Only the very new ones that had no self-discipline or anything. But if you're really wanting to apply Dharma, and you're actually wanting to be like one of these bodhisattvas who use their boat to get to the other shore, the mat becomes meaningless. Because that mindfulness that you worked on following the breath while you were sitting on the mat is the same level and depth of mindfulness that you need every single moment in anything you are encountering. So if you want to know, and it's not really a big secret, it might be to Americans because we do a lousy job of really learning about what it is that we do, if it's not ours. The actual direct method that Chan used for meditation was physical labor. That's what they used. So if you have a project like, oh, I should paint my house, that's when you meditate. Mowing the lawn, meditation. Doing dishes, it's not too laborious unless you know, somebody in your house cooked something and just burned it into those pots and you're in there scrubbing away. That's good stuff. All the easy stuff like ironing, no good. Sweeping, or use a broom that doesn't work. Then sweep. You know, one of those brooms where you gotta sweep 50 times to try and get that one little thing to move 2 inches? Those are good brooms for meditation. You're wanting to watch every single thing that arises in the mind in the activity of being alive and active in the world. That's what keeps you from being the world. Not retreat. I once heard a teacher, not mine, but I once heard a teacher give a Dharma talk that I attended where he said, retreats are for cowards. That's for people that do not want to apply the direct teachings of the Dharma to their daily life. Those that are afraid to look at themselves very nakedly when they are in the midst of doing something terrible, when they are in the midst of doing their scheming or manipulation. But the hero Bodhisattva is the one that decidedly engages in that mindfulness when they are at the peak of misbehavior. They flash it the moment they have an impulse to do something negative. That is the difference between the wise and the foolish. The foolish hide behind a ritual, they hide behind retreat, they hide behind anything that keeps them from being engaged in the difficult world. And the wise engage the world directly, without judgment, without a puritanical mindset, and the only thing that they do is watch their own mind as it is engaged with the experiences of the outer world. They do not say, this president, this Congress, this police officer, this protester are wrong. They look at their mind and go, look at how wrong my mind is. Making distinction and discrimination. Look at how stupid I am, buying into the false kind of relative truth. How my mind grasped this facade rather than peering into every sentient being's Buddha nature. And then prostrating in front of it. That's not on the mat. That's in real time when it's in your face. So now, this week, what I would encourage you to do is pick whatever of those sutras that you really like. Ones that hopefully focus something on mindfulness or meditation or something like that. And now look at it from the perspective of it was never meant for you to be doing it while sitting. Read those verses and think to yourself, okay, I'm supposed to do this in real time at my job, at my school, at my social environment, at the bar, the nightclub, the restaurant, the whatever it is that you do, theater, museum, I don't care. That is where you go to practice. And now look at those sutras, whichever one you want, and tell yourself, I'm only going to do this when I'm outside. And in fact, if it's time to practice, oh look, I need an hour of meditation, so I'm going to go to work today. Because I need to meditate, i.e. be mindful. Oh, I need to be mindful? I'm going to go to the Social Security office. The DMV. And then when you're done there, you say, okay, well, that's the end of mindfulness. I'm just going to go and become a vegetable now. Which means I'm going to go home and do nothing.
Go on retreat.
Yeah, I'm going to go on retreat. So what my teacher did tell me after being kicked out and then working 20 years in the monastery as the abbot, he said, sitting meditation is never actual meditation or mindfulness. And he regretted the 20 years that he spent in his meditation. And in fact, he said, no one should ever do more than 3 months. Do a 3-month meditation, and the rest should all be in real-time training under your teacher. And he says, that's the only way that you will collide the principles of Dharma and your little godness ego are actually going to have a head-on-head train collision, but never on the mat. It happens when you're at your worst. As you get better at it, it happens when you're at your best. It happens when you're not at anything. It happens when you're sort of this, sort of that. It just becomes something that perfumes and pervades every moment of your life. So look at those sutras and figure out how you're going to take them with you outside to actually begin practicing. That's what's going to make you a practitioner, a disciple of the Buddha. How's the weather down there today?
Pretty nice, though.
Excellent. So, you guys are going to do something a little bit different. We're going to go ahead and do closing dedication prayers. And then what I want you guys to do is go in your backyard. You guys have that yard, right? So I want you to go out there and just socialize for 30 minutes. But I want you to be incredibly mindful. Now, don't act like Puritans. By God, I swear, do not go out there and act like Buddhist and act like... Don't do that. I want you guys just to hang out. Have discussions. If you don't know each other very well, get to know each other. But individually, I want you to pay attention. Watch your mind. Watch how you develop your stories. Watch how you play out your stories. Watch how you try to sell them. And also watch how you buy into stuff that's being told to you. And I want you to apply or flash this mindfulness on being very ordinary. So don't go out there and in your robes and act like you're Buddhist and try to be, you know, oh, I can't stand that. Don't do that. That makes you a hypocrite. Because that's not really what you are. I want you to go out there and be what you really are. So if you're the kind of person like me, go, man, this fucking weather is great. Yeah, be like that. Be whatever you are and just watch that. Don't pretend to be something that's not you. Be as you as you are. So however you would talk, if you're in a bar or whatever it is that you like to go and hang out in, that's how I want you guys to engage. Be a little bit careful with the kids, right? I forgot there was kids there. Sorry about that. I'm terrible about that, even with my own. But look, that's what I want. Just raw conversation. Don't pretend, but watch. And after you watch, see what happens to yourself. I shocked me. Well, that's great. That means you're obviously starting to see you. You know, I shock myself with this, with my negativity, and I shock myself equally with my not-so-negative. Whenever something, I guess, good that I do, also shocks the hell out of me. Wow, how did I get to be such a good person? Wow, how did I get to be such a horrible person? Happens to me all the time. That's what I want you to do for your meditation today. Following the examples of